Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Help TVO create a better world through the power of learning. Visit TVO.org and make a tax-deductible donation today.
The federal government recently announced a $2.4 billion investment in artificial intelligence. It includes money earmarked to accelerate the adoption of AI in sectors as far-flung as healthcare and agriculture. The feds say this will help to, quote, secure Canada's AI advantage. But does Canada even have an advantage in AI compared to our neighbors? Are Canadian companies and industries doing enough to embrace this technology? And is there a potential downside if we embrace AI too quickly? Lots of questions to consider. And for that, we welcome Ajay Agrawal, the Jeffrey Tabor Chair in Entrepreneurship and Innovation at the U of T's Rotman School of Management and faculty affiliate at the Vector Institute for Artificial Intelligence. Krista Jones, Chief Delivery Officer at the Mars Discovery District. And Christina McElhern, Assistant Professor of Strategic Management at the U of T Scarborough and Rotman School of Management. She's also faculty affiliate at the Schwartz-Reisman Institute for Technology and Society. Boy, have we got the right people here for this conversation. Welcome, everybody, to TVO tonight. Sheldon, can I get you to put this graphic up? We want to just sort of unpack the $2.4 billion to accelerate Canada's artificial intelligence sector that the feds just announced, and here it comes. $2 billion to build and provide access to computing capabilities and technological infrastructure. There's $200 million to boost AI startups and accelerate AI adoption in critical sectors. $100 million in AI Assist program to help small and medium-sized businesses scale up and incorporate AI. There's $50 million to provide new skills training for workers in potentially disrupted sectors and communities. And another $50 million to create a new so-called Canadian AI Safety Institute. And according to the feds, all of this will, quote, help Canada stay in the lead on AI. And I guess, Ajay, I want to ask you, that presupposes we are in the lead. Are we?
Well, first off, Steve, thanks very much for having me here. So first of all, we were certainly in the lead when all this started. Much of it started here in Canada. And if you think about the different domains of AI, on research, I would say we are still a leader. So we are one of several countries that is certainly on a per capita basis. We're doing very well on the research side. On the commercialization, so think of startups and companies that are pioneering new solutions using AI. Mm-hmm. We are probably holding our weight. In other words, in terms of our relative size, we're doing quite well. On the adoption of AI, I would say we are doing reasonably poorly. So in terms of like large enterprise, relative to their peers in some other places, particularly the United States, we are falling behind.
I've got some numbers that I'm going to share with everybody on that in just a moment, talking about the Canadian-American difference here. What do you think? Are we in the lead, as the federal government seems to suggest we are?
I kind of have to agree with Ajay on this one, although I think that on the startup side, the problem that we have on the startup side is that our startup ecosystem is behind on the commercialization aspect of it. As if you think about, we lead in research, or one of the leaders in research, and we lead in the product dev side of startups. But when you actually do the commercial activities, that's where I think we're falling down, especially in AI, is when you look at the business cases, you look at putting the money behind, whether it's building our domestic companies or actually encouraging our existing companies to adopt it. So I would say that I think on the startup side, I'm not as optimistic that we're holding our own. I think we're a little behind.
That feels like a very Canadian story, that we are always sort of last to the party to commercialize stuff that we've taken the lead in. Do you agree that's where we're at?
There's some of that going on, but if you look at the raw statistics on adoption, we're actually not doing too badly compared to, say, the U.S. But I agree with Ajay here that the gap between invention and use is something to be a little bit concerned about. And while we're seeing lots of great development and innovation, the use in production is what's lagging really everywhere, but it's particularly a bit behind here in Canada.
In which case, let's ask the question, why?
Is that for me? All right. Look, I think that adoption is hard, and it's changed a lot very recently. So, for example, 5 years ago when I would be meeting with CEOs and boards of directors of large enterprise on building AIs, the number one issue was, do we have the data? Do we have the data to train our AI models? And there's a lot of pre-work to get everything ready before they even could implement an AI solution inside their organization. That's changed a lot. So ever since, particularly with the arrival of these foundation models, like language models like ChatGPT, we're able to build usable models with much less data much more quickly. And so that has really just changed the whole environment for implementation just in the last 24 months. And so so when you ask the question, why are we behind? Right now, I think everyone's scrambling trying to figure out how to do this. Companies that are already very tech forward in other domains seem to be the ones who are picking it up the most quickly.
You referenced the fact that we seem to be behind the United States, and here's a KPMG study that shows, and I guess, Krista, I'll get you to comment on this here, 35% of Canadian companies it surveyed had adopted some form of AI by February of last year, 35%. In the States, that number is 72%. Why?
Well, I think it comes to the makeup of our industry. In the state, if you look at the S&P, it's 90% is in the intangible market. And in Canada, we're nowhere near at that level of having businesses that have technology at their core. And that stems from the last 15 to 20 years when our companies have lagged behind digitization just in general, just the adoption of digital, the adoption of cloud, of SaaS. So we're just seeing the continuation
of
SaaS, software as a service, where you actually don't develop it and have it inside your prem, but you actually rent the use of a software application from another organization. So that's, and so from my perspective, it's the makeup of the fact. I think there's a stat that there's $9 trillion of GDP created through technology and healthcare globally. We don't have those headquartered companies here in Canada, right? If you look at it, and that's double what you're seeing in electricity, resources and financial services, which is where we tend to be strong. So what we're suffering from when you look at all those stats is that we don't have the medium-sized, the large-sized companies in the area where AI is rapidly being adopted globally.
That sounds very discouraging. Should we be discouraged?
Well, I'm not sure I agree with the statistics. That's a tough word to say. I do a lot of work with the U.S. Census Bureau and thinking about how we measure this very systematically. And a lot of the headline statistics are a little bit overblown, that if we look at what's actually happening in use in production, the numbers are lower and the speed is a little bit slower. So in the midst of all this rapid change and things have changed so much in, you know, the past 24 months, there's still a space to take a breath and a space to understand that while the technology is capable of many things, the firm use is still coming at a little bit slower rate. And I don't think we need to sit back and panic that this is happening everywhere all at once. And we've been measuring this over time, and we saw, for instance, in 2017, in the U.S., the adoption was only in the single digits, even though we saw these scary numbers coming out of these consulting firms. And as we recheck over time, it's coming, and it's definitely building in the larger firms, but it is not taking off at this level of 75%. We're much closer to a quarter or maybe 30, 40% in the most intensive areas, well, you know, industries or bigger firms.
Let's see where the rubber hits the road here. For example, if I were to say to you, I'm sure there are farmers watching us, and artificial intelligence is going to be part of their present or future, could you explain how AI can help a farmer?
Absolutely. I can pick two or three different examples of companies that are actually targeting farmers today. There's BugMars, a female-founded company in our RBC Women in Clean Tech program that's actually looking at insect farms, because we know that protein for the future and having that in climate sustainable ways is insects is a big part of the future of food. And what they do is they actually help farmers see the state of what's happening inside their farm so that they can get ahead of problems that might occur. They look at moisture levels. They look at kind of some of the pests that are inside. They can get a much, and that's something that would take humans walking around, observing, where you just don't have the time to be able to react when your farms are spread out. There's people doing work in companies that are doing work in lighting and making sure that you have it. You have the right lighting kind of at the right time. In Canada, we have greenhouses. And because we don't have the same sun all year long, and we can use lighting now to make sure that you mimic kind of the regular ways of doing it. So an AI is partly being able to read the data, look at all the stuff, see what's happening, and actually apply it so that we get better yields and better results from the work that we're already doing.
Gotcha. Ajay, what about healthcare? How can AI help in healthcare?
Great. Well, healthcare, I think, is, in my view, the category where there is the most headroom for benefiting. In other words, given the size of that industry, of how much we spend here in Canada, U.S., all the OECD countries spend on healthcare, and the level of efficiency, there's the most to gain from AI. So far as I can tell, it's been amongst the slowest adopter. It's because it's so regulated. And there's so many bizarre incentives in the healthcare system where you introduce and we've already demonstrated in the lab so many dimensions in which AIs are better than docs. So for your viewers who aren't as familiar with how AI works, think of AI as basically a prediction technology. It uses computational statistics to do prediction. Diagnosis, the very first thing, no matter what you're sick with, you show up at your doc, the very first step is diagnosis. That's a prediction problem. So doc doesn't know exactly what's wrong. They look at you, they might run some tests, they ask you questions, and they're trying to predict what's the problem. And so AI has been outperforming docs in early detection of breast cancer, early detection of MS and Alzheimer's, early detection of diabetes. And in all of these cases, they demonstrate in the lab, but so far, very little application because of all the restrictions. And for example, things like reimbursements. Like, well, how are we going to change the reimbursement system? And how does insurance get affected if we have AIs that are making these diagnoses? So lots of non-technical barriers to bringing this in. So we have been in Canada a leader in AI applications in healthcare as Chris said, on the product creation side, but in terms of deployment, very slow.
Should we be bringing in fewer regulations or take away some of these obstacles to allow this to flourish more?
Well, I think there's really this recognition we need to have that the technology is advancing exponentially, but organizations still advance rather linearly. So there's regulation and there's regulatory frictions, of course, but there's also just the frictions of what happens inside an organization when you're trying to change the process, innovate in the process that has to use the new technology. We saw this with the internet that came through like a wildfire and it was everywhere all at once, but to deploy it and put it inside firms and to put it inside systems, and in when you're trying to get people to work together in a system or firms to work together in a value chain, you have to coordinate and orchestrate everyone to move forward. If you've got a bottleneck in one place, it's going to slow the entire thing down. And I think that's what we're grappling with in lots of sectors and lots of applications. And the solutions won't be universal. They'll be very particular to an application or an industry or a firm. And recognizing all that unevenness, I think, is something that we need to start with and be very creative in our approach to solving.
And let me just to build on Kristen's point, to offer some people some hope. I've, for example, recently saw some great examples of what she described at SickKids Hospital in Toronto, where they've got four different lighthouse projects where they're deploying AI and addressing all the things Christina's talking about in terms of all the non-technical human aspects. For example, early detection of cardiac arrest, triage at the front desk when you're checking in. So in other words, predicting which patients will need which types of things even before a doc's available so that they can start moving them through the process. And so many of the hurdles that they had to overcome in implementing these at SickKids were non-technical. They were people-related frictions, because they had to adapt the system in order to accommodate the technology.
Krista.
I do think that one of the strengths that Canada's AI ecosystem has in what's called applied AI. We hear a lot about Gen AI, but then there's the applied AI, which is solving some of these problems, which is kind of between point solutions and systemic change. And there's a couple of companies I just want to mention that are helping us get some of the great innovations that are happening in breast cancer treatment to the market faster. If you think about Altus Labs, that is doing some great work in trying to use for clinical trials and trying to use imaging as a way, and think about a human trying to sort through hundreds of people's data on imaging. So they're using AI to be able to do that, to get faster results into the clinical trials, to get better outcomes so that we can get it in the hands of patients faster. There's Cidience, which is, I think I said that right. I hope I didn't mispronounce that company's names, but there is Cidience, who's actually doing it to help people look at regulatory filings around clinical trials globally on the regulatory front to help get through those barriers. Because the barriers have usually been driven. There's the need for humans to adapt, but there's also just been so much information, but that's so siloed. And it's really hard for the humans and the processes to absorb all of that data. And that's what AI does, is it empowers the human in the process. And we need to get people understanding that that's what the future of working in an AI-enabled society is going to be.
Let me read this tweet here. This is from someone who works at a venture capital firm in Silicon Valley. And Sheldon, here we go. Thanks for putting this up. Today, I met a company where the founder literally made me describe an app in text, and 20 minutes later, the entire app, back end and front end, was made and fully functional. Feels like the industrial revolution of software engineering. Okay, Christina, start us off on this. Will we look back on the era of massive teams of coders building an app, much like the way we look at the pre-industrial era today?
Well, I think when you frame it like that, people get a bit scared. They get sort of resistant to that whole model because they think this is going to come in and take away jobs or replace people. But actually, when I look at this, I think about my washing machine. So I have a washing machine that washes clothes so much better, faster than I could by hand. And I'm not mad at it. I'm not worried that it's going to take away anything from my productivity. In fact, it allows me to do many other more enjoyable, more creative, more important work.
But you know why? Because we understand what a washing machine is, and we understand there are jobs in the creation of that machine. We don't know that about this.
We're figuring it out. And I think there's lots of choices. And there will be places where this will replace human labor. This will replace certain software engineers in certain tasks, for sure. But there's also so much opportunity. And I think if we over-focus on the loss or the replacement, we're going to miss the opportunity to find that complementarity, that co-intelligence, as Ethan Mollett calls it, where we can have an assistant that helps us do more, better, faster.
But and you have to look at it from the concept of, you know, if we go back to the era of the coder, where like the apps that were being created just by those coders building it up overnight were not the things that were solving breast cancer, and they weren't the things that were solving some of the more harder problems that society has. So I look at that at the natural evolution of a whole professional discipline where they started out, you got people interested in coding and that became something, it became ubiquitous. And now the people that got really interested, they went into software engineering and you could see the building of the skill set. And so right now, a lot of the coders that I talk to, they don't want to do that app at the front end. Like they don't want to do that. They want to do the meatier problems and they're evolving. So this is about the natural evolution, I think, of that industry. It had its time when the coding side blew up in terms of what the app is happening. And now I think we see that part of the productivity as essentially being solved. And we're trying to focus that mind that thinks in that logical way to some of the harder problems. And that's where you go from being a coder to being a software engineer to being an AI scientist. And you start to see that evolution of people. So for me, it's a natural evolution of skills.
Is coding no longer the sexy profession it once was?
Well, I mean, certainly this is your example is not a trivial point. And you know, Christina and I were trained very similarly, and we both recite from the gospel of economics on this, which is everybody starts with talking about agriculture and reminding everyone that, remember, over 50% of us worked in agriculture. Today, less than 2% of us work in agriculture, and yet most people want a job, so they'll have one. And you know, aren't we glad that we don't all still work in agriculture? There's so many other things. Like, in other words, nothing wrong with agriculture, but many other things to do. Mm. My concern, and I sort of, you know, up until I would say a year ago, would recite the same perspective that Christina shared and Krista, is that the reason that that VC tweeted that thing is because it shocked him or her. And the reason it's shocking is because it's happening so fast. Mm-hmm. And all the times we've gone through this before, the technological development has A, taken a longer time, and B, been narrowly focused in particular areas. This thing, it, you know, like that thing that does the that automated the software generation is a foundational model that can write software, can also make slides, can produce the script for the show, that can prepare all of the interview notes to help you prep for today's session. In other words, it can do all those things. And you open the show by talking about a $2 billion investment by the Canadian government. Mm-hmm. The company that did that raised $1 billion from Microsoft in 2019, another $2 billion in 2021, another $10 billion in 2023. Okay, they're a tiny company, originally not-for-profit company. So in other words, $13 billion to one company. And we're having this show because the Canadian government at a national level is putting in $2 billion. Okay? Another company of a similar type, only founded 3 years ago, Anthropic, just closed $4 billion, $1.5 billion in 2021 when they started, and another $2.75 from Amazon investment last year in 2023. So $4 billion for one startup company that's doing this, a foundational capability to write software, to write scripts, to read essays, all the stuff.
So if we look at the numbers, this does not look like a pond that we can play in.
It just, I just want to raise the possibility that the normal script that people like Christina and I recite in settings like this, where don't worry, we've had innovation before, we've been through all this before, I'm not sure if this falls in the same category because of how fast and how broad it's moving.
Okay, like, you want to take that on?
Well, it is fast. And so if you wanted us to have a friendly argument, we're probably in violent agreement on most of these things.
Only if you want to.
I do agree with Ajay that the speed is concerning, that it's hard to adapt, and it's hard to adapt to such big changes really quickly. This is a call for focusing on this and bringing our creative juices to bear and having all these conversations. But I don't think panic serves. I'm going to take a page out of Taylor Swift's book and say, you need to calm down. That if we don't sort of take a breath and bring all these concerns out, of course, but if we just tumble forward into a frenzy, I don't know that we're going to solve these big problems.
Krista,
I'm not sure that taking a breath with the rapid pace of what the rest of the world is doing is actually the approach Canada should take. I actually think that this is a race that's happening globally, and we are getting left behind in terms of the speed in which other governments are actually allocating resources into this area. So when I look at the ability to take a breath, I'm like you. I'm naturally an optimistic person. I tend not to be one that cries wolf or gets scared about those kinds of things. But right now, I'm worried for the future of Canada. I'm worried for my children. I'm worried for what's happening because we're falling behind.
What are you worried about in terms
I'm
of your
I'm worried
kids?
About the fact that we're not actually enabling the industry in the way that the rest of the world is, knowing that AI is coming and it's foundational in terms of what needs to happen. And so it's $2 billion. Sure, it's great for Canada. It's not great comparatively in terms of where we want to be, is my personal take on this.
And I can imagine a lot of people watching this right now and listening to it are panicking because A, they don't understand it, and B, they are sure that with all of the talk around this and the inevitability of it, that their jobs are going to disappear because of it. Now tell them why they shouldn't panic about that.
Well, historically, as Ajay said, and as our training and we've been studying technological change for a minute, and we have always figured it out. I do agree with Krista that we can't just sit back on, you know, we can't rest on our heels here and watch this all unfold. We do need to lean forward and to really figure out what the jobs of the future are. I think a big challenge is going to be in how we train people. So I'm an educator, and AI came into my classroom really quickly. And many people decided that the approach to that was to put the brakes on and say no. And I think a more productive approach, with the one I tried to take, is to actually require my students to play around with ChatGPT, to try to get familiar with the technology. You said we get to use our washing machines because we understand them. Well, if we approach the technology and work with it, that understanding will start to unfold, and we can start to get better, faster, I hope, at training people to work with the technology and, you know, find the new jobs that they need to
fill. Wait a second. First of all, I'm not convinced that panic is a bad thing. Okay, so in other words, it's being described here as if panic would be a bad thing. I think a bad thing would be to people to watch this on their television and then just flick the channel and go watch something else and say, oh, well, you know. In other words, in my view, this is moving sufficiently fast. It's going to affect everybody at some level. There should be panic, but panic can be productive. Like, in other words, you know, what's the flip side of panic? It could be lethargy is not the right word. But
complacency.
Complacency. Okay, so complacency, if you think of complacency as the flip side of the coin to panic, if I had to pick one of those right now for Canada,
go for panic.
I would go for panic.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, and channel the panic into a productive way. So I also don't think that even if it comes roaring in and affects a lot of things, like, in other words, slow, people hardly notice it, and all of a sudden, bam, fast, that would also, I'm not sure, in other words, I don't view that as a bad thing. I think our healthcare is in very rough shape in terms of the demand and versus supply for healthcare capabilities. If we had a very significant overhaul to healthcare, I think Canada would be much better off, you know, province by province. Same with education. Same, you brought up agriculture at the beginning. Same with agriculture. So I don't think that even if it were to roll in and have significant disruptive change on all these industries, that on balance, Canada would be worse off. I think we'd be better off.
I'm down to my last minute here, so let me put this to you. One of the last things we had on that list there was this notion of an AI safety institute. Because we have heard people like the U of T's Jeffrey Hinton say that he's actually quite terrified as you look down the road at what potentially this all could turn out to be. How big a concern is that for you?
So safety is always a big concern. We've been concerned about privacy since the onset of the internet. Unfortunately, consumers don't seem to be as worried about privacy as those of us who actually study it in interesting ways. I actually think that's one of the areas where we've underfunded ourselves, is the ability to do it. But the natural positive optimist in me, in Canadian researchers and innovators, is that we actually have tech for good and the use of tech in a responsible way at the core of a lot of the businesses that we're creating. So my way of kind of getting around it is to say, hey, look, let's deal with Canadian researchers, let's deal with Canadian entrepreneurs, and let's get that kind of element at the core. And I do think we need to spend some more money on the longer term implications of what we're trying to do on the research side.
Last 20 seconds to you, Ajay, in terms of this safety institute. Do we need it?
I think, yes, we do. I think it's very important. And I think the more advanced our thinking becomes on safety, the faster we can move on progress.
Absolutely.
Terrific. Great discussion, everybody. It was great to have you all in here at TVO tonight. Krista Jones from the Mars Discovery District. And on the other side of the table, Christina McElhern, UTS, and the Rotman School of Management, Ajay Agrawal, the Jeffrey Tabor Chair in Entrepreneurship and Innovation, U of T's Rotman School of Management. Thanks so much, everybody.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
The Agenda with Steve Paikin is made possible through generous philanthropic contributions from viewers like you. Thank you for supporting TVO's journalism.